The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
Welcome to another episode of On the Road Edition, hosted by Stevie Kim. Each week, she travels to incredible wine destinations, interviewing some of the Italian wine scene's most interesting personalities, talking about wines, the foods, as well as the incredible travel destinations.
Hello, my name is Stevie Kim, and we are back with Living the Dolce Vita. We usually have a slot at 1:30. Today, I'm joining you from Rust. It's in Austria. We're running a bit late today because it took us some time. There was a little bit of traffic. So hello, everybody. Welcome back. Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, I'm well. How are you?
Listen, I have to show you where I am. Hold on. Let me see if I can turn this around. Here, maybe I can show you this way. Can you see?
Wow. Where are you?
Can you believe this? It's super windy today, but I just wanted to show you. I'm in Rust. It's in Austria.
Usbrig.
Yeah, exactly. We're doing a little Vinitaly tour today in a few hours. So
that's cool. My tea.
Oh, you've been drinking.
I've been tasting.
Yeah, tasting. What have you been tasting?
The new vintages of Barolo.
Oh, and how's that going? Where are you tasting? Are you tasting at the consortium?
I'm from
Dallas.
I'm currently in the consortium's office here in Alba, having an espresso, thank God.
Oh, okay. So how many wines have you tasted?
I've been tasting for 3 days now, and I'm almost at 300.
Oh, wow. And how many have you got left?
A little over 200 more.
Oh, shit. Are you doing like a Barolo report, or what are you doing?
Yeah, I'll do a Barolo and Barbaresco report. Next week, I'm going to taste all the Barbaresco. There's about 180 or 200 of those to taste.
Right.
And then I'll write a report about 2020 Barolo and 2021 Barbaresco. And they've been really pretty. They're ripe and juicy. It's a very approachable vintage. And so tasting them is not as hard, but it makes my mouth and teeth, especially with the white beard, it really pronounces the purple lips.
You're looking good, Jeff.
Thanks.
Our connectivity is a little spotty. I mean, I understand because you're in Piemonte, so.
Let me try to go down to their office.
Okay. Italian internet strikes again.
the Wi-Fi here sucks.
Yeah, I mean, you're very, very grainy. But so I'll tell you what I've been up to. Monday, I went to see the Pope. Yeah, it was absolutely crazy. I mean,
how was that?
You know, it was very, very interesting because it was like 40 producers, and then there was a big delegation of course, Verona Fiere.
Scusami, Steve. È possibile un vicino usare con 30 minuti per un. Say hi, this is...
Ciao.
Sì, sì, esatto. Con Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi. I can tell you Italian is improving. Wi-Fi. That's hilarious.
Sì. No, io ho Wi-Fi con connectivity un sotto...
con la password sopra?
No, sopra...
Wi-Fi.
Non funziona.
Quasi.
Qui è possibile una...
Sì.
What's the word for borrow?
Prestare.
Oh, no.
Posso prendere in prestito?
È possibile un prestito, un ufficio per un momento. Okay, perfetto. I get to use the director's office.
Maybe you can mess around a little bit.
The director now is not here.
Okay.
Se vuoi puoi stare quanto vuoi. Questo è il password Wi-Fi.
Ok, perfetto, grazie.
Il password Wi-Fi?
Sì, sì.
Allora, password Wi-Fi è...
IC.
We're going to tell everybody in the entire world now.
Perfetto. Okay. Grazie.
we're going to give the, you know, Wi-Fi password to everybody now.
Right. And here, when you come to Alba, this is the place. But now, yeah. Am I coming through better?
Actually, you seem to be. Let's see.
Okay, good.
Okay, Direttore Jeff, Matt Liddy. Hi.
Okay, so Matt. Back to the Pope.
Yeah, so the Pope, you know, as you know, I'm agnostic, but it's kind of a big deal, I guess, right? And it is a big deal. It's not something I had imagined doing, but it's incredibly protocoled, right? So it's complex and complicated. Also, because this poor man, this poor Pope, I don't know if you can call the pontiff the man, but anyway, so the whole point is he has a very, very tight schedule. Now, I was a little disappointed because he was clearly fatigued, right? And he like has a routine of the audience, like one before us, one after us, and like it's continuous.
Wow.
So from what I understand, he had been unwell. I was actually expecting to see him in a wheelchair or even not showing up at all, right? But he came, he walked, but you know, clearly fatigued. He gave his speech, which was really nice. For 5 minutes, which I surreptitiously, of course, recorded because you're not supposed to do that. But, you know, I wanted to share with everybody because he was talking about wine. And then.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Don't forget to visit our YouTube channel, Mama Jumbo Shrimp, for fascinating videos covering Stevie Kim and her travels across Italy and beyond, meeting winemakers, eating local foods, and taking in the scenery. Now, back to the show.
Then everyone does the procession, like no like kissing the hand or kneeling, just handshake. And I realized from the photo I got back that I actually grabbed him with both of my hands. Yeah. I was like one of the very few people. I don't know what came over me. I did that. I tried to ask him a question, but he didn't understand. And then I just moved on because I didn't want to monopolize. Then he has his routine, right? So that he walks to the audience, to his chair to do the photo op with the group.
Oh, he doesn't have a routine like a pope, a rabbi, and an imam walking to a bar. Not that kind of routine.
Yeah. No. I mean, he's incredibly generous. And when you go to actually shake his hand, his eyes are incredibly penetrating, you know? So I found that was, you get enthralled. Yeah. You're in awe, you know? So it's very fleeting, brief, but it stays with you. So incredible day. And then there were conferences and dinner and all of that stuff. But definitely the highlight was actually getting to meet the Pope.
And so before you go in, what do they tell you? Be like, you have to walk this. You can't turn your back on him. Like, how long?
No. So first of all, I mean, I'm terrible because I didn't even know there was a dress code. Right. And everyone is like, what do you mean you don't? I mean, luckily, I have a lot of black. Right. But like when I saw the pictures of the other audiences, it seemed like a funeral. Everyone is in black. And I didn't know that. So now they said that you didn't have to wear a veil because all the women had to wear a veil.
Right.
You know, like all of these like dress codes, I hadn't a clue. Luckily, like my entire wardrobe is black. Right. So that wasn't a problem. But luckily, our group, it was kind of a private one. So private audience. So they had done all the protocols and we had a separate like VIP line to just, you know, go straight into the audience.
That's but there amazing. Was a
whole. Yeah, so there was a whole, you know, organization behind that. And we had about 40 producers. Of course, not everybody. There are 4,000 exhibitors, but 40 got chosen to be invited. And then, of course, a delegation. So Federico, who had joined last week, Federico Briccoli, he's the president. It was actually his idea. When he first told me, I was like, what is he thinking? Like, you know, going to see the Pope, like, you know, but actually it was very nice. And I was happy that he came up with the idea. So it was nice, you know, something I had never dreamt of doing. And, you know, it was an honor.
Well, you're the only person I know that's met Pope. So that's pretty cool.
And then you can't take pictures. You can't have your own photographer. There's only the official photographer from the Vatican. And then you can request the photos, but everything is incredibly slow. You request it. First of all, it doesn't get published until like the day after or whatever. Right. You order it, but then they have to send your confirmation of your order. And then they say, we will let you know in the next few days how you can pay, the procedure of paying. So I, in the beginning, I was like, you know, we're so used to getting everything immediately. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is kind of frustrating. But in the end, when we finally got it, it was much more satisfying. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, no, totally. How much a picture of the Pope cost?
Yeah, it costs €8.
Oh, that's not
so
bad.
You can...
He could charge a lot more.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like an Italian process at all.
That's a Vatican process.
Yeah, yes. You can tell it's still a very old process, but €8 per picture, you know, so you can pick as many as you want. But there is a complete procedure, which is unusually slow. But in the end, I guess you can appreciate it more, you know.
That's amazing. So, well, congratulations.
Yeah. So, Jeff, tell me about your week, other than you've just mostly been tasting, right?
All I do is starting Monday, I didn't taste. I did school and then prepared all my notes and everything. And I read about the vintages and I looked at just any information I could find about, you know, 2020 and 2021 and Barbaresco. And then what I do is I go to school in the morning and then I drive to Alba, which from Torino, it's like an hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, so you do this from, you like kind of commute every day.
Day. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then, so I taste for about 4.5 to 5 hours.
Just straight, or you have a pause?
I take like a 20-minute break.
Right.
At a certain point, like once my palate starts kind of fatiguing.
Yeah. Well, that's I mean, I can. And you're tasting by yourself, or you're tasting with others?
I taste by myself.
Okay.
So I'm in a room with two people that are organizing the tasting. It's all blind.
Yeah.
So they have just these flights that are like in bags, and they just, I taste and they tell me, like, we don't do double blind for wine enthusiasts. We do single blind. So I just don't know the producer. I know vintage. And I know, like, we first tasted Barolo Classic, and then we tasted Comune, and today we started with the MGA.
Okay.
Today I did, I tasted like Vigna Rionda and Lazarita from Serra Lunga, which the wines were all really, really beautiful.
Right.
But yeah, it's interesting the mentality for tasting, because you want to be really earnest and honest and make sure you get all the information you can get out of each wine. But again, like, they're all the same grape. They're from the same place. So the differences are really narrow, and it's just really trying to hone in on what those differences are, because Nebbiolo should taste within a certain range of each other. So the descriptors are all... they're not that far apart. But the biggest thing that I've noticed in this vintage is the structural differences between wines, depending on when people picked the wines, you know, can go from, it's kind of an interesting divide of wines being really light and fresh with really good acidity. If they held on a little bit later, the wines are just richer and more mouth-filling, the tannins, the acidity is a lot lower. So it's a good vintage to drink pretty early on, but has this very kind of vibrant personality to it. So it's been fun to really... I'm only a little over halfway done for the Barolo tasting, so it's been pretty interesting.
How many vintage reports have you done for Barolo and Barbaresco?
I mean, published,
yeah,
I've only done one, because last year was my first year with Wine Enthusiasts, right. So this will be my second one. But I've been lucky enough to come to like these vintage tastings that the consortio... Oh, Wayne, great, can you come taste with me? Sure, come on, Wayne. I'd love to actually have someone else with me. It's pretty lovely to taste in this like big room by yourself. But I put some music on and just go for it. But I've been writing vintage reports for myself and for like my restaurant staffs for like 10 and 15 years.
Right. When will this report come out, like be published? Do you know?
The vintage report should come out in February. And then the scores will probably come out in April, right around Vin Italy.
Okay. Oh, so that's great. Yeah. That's fantastic. You've already tasted quite a number of wines. Other than the structure note that you had given just now, is there anything that comes to mind just in a very sweeping generalization in terms of the vintage?
Overall, 2020 is, you know, coming off of 2019, which was a much more structured, firm, kind of put in your cellar vintage. This will be more approachable. It's a little more vibrant. The fruit is a little like more present on the nose and the palate. The acidity is just a tad lower overall. The structure of the wines is really good. And it's interesting. The generalization comes from tasting like the Comune wines and the the classic blends, but like today tasting Viña Rionda, the Viña Rionda wines really showed Viña Rionda. I feel like Viña Rionda as a vineyard, you know, just sits forward. It has broad shoulders. It's this interplay between really rich wines and great structure. And it was all there, but it was all giving right now. Like I would like sit there and love to drink these wines, but they're going to age really, really well. Someone just asked, what are you listening to?
Yeah, that's
tasting.
It's Richard.
So yesterday.
Anything that gets you in the groove.
So yes, yesterday I was looking, the first day I was listening to John Coltrane and Duke Ellington had an album together. And that was really, it was nice, but
bit mellow.
Yeah, it was super mellow. But yesterday there's this techno marching band
that
I like on TikTok called Mutate, M-E-U-T-E.
Right?
And so I listened to their albums yesterday. And so it's got this like nice droning beat to it that's pretty up-tempo.
Right.
Not like super fast, but like
right.
a good like boom, boom.
And so it gives you like a little bit of rhythm,
It's got rhythm and verve to it. So I really found that kind of that mid-tempo, something that kind of lifts you up while you taste is really, really
and
fun.
And not making you fall asleep, I suppose.
And I can't do tasting and listen to music that has words. So it has to be has to be in that kind of, you know, non-vocal genre.
Right. So do you have to like prepare the wines yourself? Like, do you open the bottles?
No.
They open it for you.
So we have a person from Wine Enthusiast come and someone from the consortio and that they tag team. And it's good for them that I don't come until the afternoon, because they organize all the flights. I get
in the morning.
Everything's in the bags. Everything's been open. They've tasted through all the wines to make sure there's nothing corked or anything flawed. And then they flight them kind of in groups. So like, that's why I get to try all the Viña Rionda together, all the Liste together, all the MGAs. And then I just start tasting. Sometimes I have a really good rhythm, and then sometimes I have to kind of take a break and like think about it and then restart the tasting. It's an interesting process to kind of refine.
I think someone from the back office asked, how do you prepare for your winery visit when you do?
I haven't done any winery visits yet this year, but I'm going to in February. But what I usually do...
And where are you going? Can you let it... what area?
I'm going to be in Umbria at the end of February.
Okay.
I haven't got the full itinerary yet, but I have a phone call about it tomorrow. What I'll do is once I decide where I'm going to go, if I don't like have a good working knowledge already of the winery, like I haven't been before, I'll do some research about the producer, the history, the vineyards, farming practices, all that stuff, and kind of just have a list of questions, kind of like just going to interview someone just to make sure what I've read is on the up and up. And then, you know, just kind of, you know, listen and hear what they're saying and have an idea of what their whole MO is about, their idea for wine and their idea for farming, and just see how that jives with all the other stuff I've been around in my life.
So there's DV Waiter. He says, ciao, Jeff. Can you tell me a Barolo Barbaresco that you have tasted recently that surprised you?
That surprised me. That's a really good question. I can't talk about what I've tasted today.
Of course.
But surprised me. I went there in the summertime and I tasted a lot of wines in the fall. And then I tasted for review some other wines in the wintertime. And the evolution of what's happening at like Fontana Freda and Borgogno, I think is really, really amazing. I think what Andrea Farinetti and his father and his brothers and all the people that work on the team have done over the past decade to get where they are today. You know, I think for a while there was like an emotive idea of a monolith that's kind of not what it is. And I think when I'd gone and tasted the wines and just seen the progress and talked with Andrea, and seeing how really beautiful and like soulful the winemaking is, it really transpired into something special.
But,
so that's on the Barolo side.
So people ask me like, what is the difference between Fontana Freda wines in terms of like Barolo? Let's just take Barolo, right? And Borgogno. And stylistically, what would you say?
Obviously, there's a...
I mean, that's a geekier question.
There's a terroir perspective, right? So Fontana Freda is based in Serra Lunga, and they have a monopole with the Fontana Freda vineyard, the MGA. And obviously, and I want to just talk about the kind of their higher end wines, not like the, they make a Fontana Fredda kind of introductory Barolo. That's a calling card that I'm always really impressed when a producer of that size, and this is for Bordeaux, this is for Burgundy, this is for anywhere in the world, Champagne especially, where they make a wine in a quantity that, that makes it available kind of globally, and the wine is really darn good. That is, that I think is the hardest thing to do in the world. If you have 2 hectares and you make shitty wine, you just got to work a little harder. But if you have over 100 hectares and you're busting your ass and everybody is on the same boat rowing in the same direction and you make year in and year out really good wine, I think that's super impressive.
I feel that way about Champagne, like the big, big, huge Champagne houses. You know, they're criticized often, but to come out with that large number of quantity of these cuvées, I mean, it's pretty impressive. It's incredibly methodical and scientific. Mm-hmm. So I feel the same way too.
You know, I think the differences, irrespective of the terroir, is just, you know, Bourgogne, I just recently tried their Canubi 15. Just a few nights ago. And, you know, Canubi is such an interesting vineyard and it's in a tough spot right now because it's a warmer spot. It's always been a Grand Cru, but it's a tough place to grow grapes now. But there's an elegance. There's a pretty, Bourgogne has this really lifted vibe to it, right? This, this like just really kind of, it's enveloping. It's almost like when you swirl the glass, it comes out with these velvet gloves and kind of captures you in that moment. And then depending on the cuvée or the vigna that you get from Fontana Fredda, can have the Serralonga punch, the brawniness. But then, you know, you try La Rosa, which is like a loup deep within the Fontana Fredda vineyard. It smells like roses. It's unbelievable. So it's hard to generalize. Yeah. I think you have to like go very wine by wine. The winemaking, what they're doing is just they've, you know, at Bourgogne now, they're all certified organic. It's all native yeast fermentation. It's all cement fermentation. It's all big boti. The wines are just really, really beautiful. And I had kind of forgotten about them and not kept up until, you know, the past 2 years and then getting to go there and visit and talk and then taste the wines repeatedly over time. I saw Jenny Guizio on here, and Jenny and I were there filming Sip Trip in 2018. And I remember we were tasting the wines out of barrel, we both looked at each other like, fuck, these wines have gotten a lot better. And so I think they're just on a trajectory that just, and price quality value ratio is high for the winery.
Okay, we're going to just answer the last question and then we're going to have to close and wrap this up.
The question comes
from Ale 1993 Granada. Hi, Stevie and Jeff. Can you share your opinion about Etna Wine and what do you think about soon they're going to be DOCG appellation?
I don't know if they're going to be a DOCG. You may know more about that than me.
Yeah, this is actually a question for Professor Escienza because, as you know, he's the president of Comitato del Vino. And that's where they make the decisions. I reckon it'll be fairly soon because they are really pushing that, you know.
I think we're both on a line. Our opinion of Etna, the wines are great.
Yeah, who doesn't love Etna? I mean, that's what I like to know, right?
I think people who haven't tasted wine in a long time, or I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Etna wines are still very great wines, potentially also long aging, especially the whites. I don't know if you've tasted the whites like from a lighter vintages, and still very good quality in terms of value.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been lucky enough to do a lot of great wine dinners, and we did a wine dinner a long time ago at Del Posto. But they're like one of the OG Etna producers. It starts with a B.
Benanti.
Thank you.
Okay.
We did whites back to the 90s.
Yeah, they are one of the historic wineries from Etna.
And those wines are absolutely stunning and, you know, helped us change the minds of a lot of guests at our restaurants about the region. And I think today, you know, globally, they're a super, super wine region that for white, red, rosé, sparkling even, there's some really beautiful wines there.
Yeah, so fun fact, I don't know if you know, but Benanti is partially owned by, I think, 40% by Renzo Rosso, who's the jeans dude.
I didn't know that.
He's actually a big fashionist. He owns Mani. He owns everything. He owns a lot of the fashion houses, you know, and he's buying up some wineries now because he wants to, I suppose, like kind of has his own group, of different wine estates.
Cool.
So that's what he's been doing. Yeah. So that's a fun fact. Listen, I think it's great having some questions from the audience as well and through our weekly chat. Thank you for all joining us today. And that is it, because I have to go and start preparing for an event.
Yeah,
Vinitaly Roost,
nice.
Austria, where I get to see some of my friends from Austria. And of course, Pepe Schuller, I don't know if you've met him, just the nicest, you know, MW ever in history, I think. So generous. And he runs the school here, Wine Academy, also a flagship lesson center for the MW program.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
Next week, I'll actually be in South Africa, but kind of same time zone. Yes.
Yeah.
So I'll see where I am and then we'll chat. I mean, it's not important you get everybody on Insta Live, because we are recording this and we are also replaying, of course, on Italian Wine Podcast, wherever you get pods. So everyone can have access even afterwards.
That's
okay.
What, you're the queen.
Okay. Ciao. Queen. Buona
Ciao.
Settimana.
Grazie mille.
Ciao, Jeff.
Ciao.
Thank you for joining us on another installment of On the Road Edition, hosted by Stevie Kim. Join her again next week for more interesting content in the Italian wine scene. You can also find us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. You can also check out our YouTube channel, Mama Jumbo Shrimp, to watch these interviews and the footage captured of each location. Cin cin!